You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 305. And on this episode, I got on Sydney Aburi, who has kindly agreed to share his story with us. Now, Sydney lives in Kenya, so it's great to get him on to share his story and his experience with OCD. And specifically, we talk about intrusive thoughts around religion, avoiding school, the severity of his compulsions, worrying about leaving his country, studying abroad, and what that meant for his OCD, suicidal-themed OCD, sexual orientation-themed OCD. We discuss his journey of finding effective therapy. We talk about panic, words of hope, and much, much more. A really insightful conversation. It was a real pleasure to speak with Sydney. And thanks as always to NoCD for supporting the work that I do. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. If you wanted to find out more about their therapy services and whether they take your insurance currently, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/COCD stories, or the link will be in the episode description. And thank you to you guys for listening. As always, I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Sydney. Welcome to the show, Sydney.
Thank you.
It's good to have you on. And as you know, I'd love to hear your OCD story, and you can go into as little or as much detail as you want to share with us.
My OCD story is quite interesting. I think like everyone on the show that I've had on the podcast so far, that I've had kind of dates back to the first time when they actually noticed symptoms. I think for me, it was up until like 2 years ago when I had a bad trigger that I actually came to know about OCD. But in retrospect, I think my first symptoms, I said noticing my first symptoms when I'm about 10, between 10 and 13 years. And so I'm a Christian, and I go to church. And I remember the first instance, I went to church and I started having intrusive thoughts about, like, does God exist, right? And which was very shocking for me. And it was a bit alarming as well, because everyone in church seemed so comfortable, like they're 100% sure. And I was like, I definitely have a problem. Yeah. If I'm questioning this and everyone is singing happily and everyone is just praising God, I was like, okay, I definitely have a problem. But I just thought at the time that I was having I had a weak faith. That's what I thought. And so I remember I kind of struggled with it for about a month or two. I don't know how it ended, but it ended, I guess. Probably compulsed the hell out of the hell out of that intrusive thought. I don't know, but it somehow ended. And then about 3 years later, I was joining secondary school in Kenya. And so the first year and my first time going to school. And so this became a trigger for me, yeah. Right? And I didn't know at the time. So what happened was, I go into boarding school. I say bye to my mom. As soon as she leaves that evening, it's like just like something clicked in my brain. And it was, I immediately had a panic attack. But at the time, the weird thing is, I don't remember having any themes. And what I thought was, I thought I was homesick. I thought that was it. Yeah. I thought I was homesick. And so my mission was to convince my mom to get me out of boarding school into a day school. And so I tried everything. Unfortunately, at the time, the boarding school that I went to, so in Kenya, we have what is known as the Kenya Certificate of Secondary Education. And so every school's top students are ranked, and that in that particular year, that school had produced like the third student nationally. So for any parent, they're not going to remove you out of a good school. No. simply because you're having and according to us at the time, simply because you're going through like homesick in quotes. So I really had it. I think of all my experience with anxiety and OCD and anything, that has to be like the toughest period, maybe second toughest period, because I was only 13 or 14 at the time, 14 or 15 actually at the time. And then I had panic attacks almost every single day for the first like all the 8 months, I think it was 8 or 9 months of that year. It was maybe catching a break for a day, but it was a panic attack the next day. And I remember actually in attempt to actually get out of boarding school, I can't remember who told me about the fact that the appendix is not like you can live without an appendix, basically. So during my second term, I remember I used to drink, I used to mix like water with a lot of sand, and I used to drink this just to get a way to get out of school, and which worked. And so I ended up getting operated in and having my appendix removed. I know it's crazy, but I got out of school for about 3 weeks, right? And even after that, I thought I'd get a break or get some sympathy votes from my mom, and she'd allow me to change schools. But she did the one thing I don't even think she knew she was doing at the time. She did like, I think that's to be the biggest exposure. So I come back to school in third term, and my mom basically tells me, "So Sydney, whether you cry blood or you cry milk, you're not getting out of this school." I could not believe my ears. And so I figured, okay, now I have to figure out a way of making this school work. And weirdly enough, the more I fought through, the more I just realized that I have no way to get out of all this anxiety other than going through it. I started enjoying school, and the anxiety went down. And still at the time, I didn't know it was OCD. So that died down. And unfortunately, like about a few months later, my mom passed away, which wasn't a trigger for me, actually, weirdly enough. But I got through that. Then fast forward to my first year of campus, university. So I was going to a university that's far away from another city other than where I live. And so this time around, it came with like the anxiety. It wasn't as bad, to be honest. It just came with a lot of themes, religious themes. And once again, I started thinking, oh man, like my faith must be really shaken. Like I just moved to a different city, and that's it. And I remember I had a friend who I'd go to church with, and I remember asking him whether he goes through the same type of thoughts, whether he has the same type of intrusive thoughts. And he was like, oh yeah, I also have intrusive thoughts. Those are intrusive thoughts. And as long as like, you didn't be called faith if there wasn't doubt in the first place. And that made sense to me. And I was like, okay, that's great. And that worked for a period of time, at least with regards to the religious themes. And I treated them like that again. I didn't at the time I didn't know it was OCD. So while I may not have been compulsing on that particular theme, there were definitely many other themes that I was doing compulsions on. But that also went down. So when OCD's problem was 2 years ago, so I never wanted to leave Kenya. Honestly, there wasn't any objective reason as to why. I just had a fear that I couldn't explain, right? And so what happened was, so at the time I used to stay with my aunts, and of course they wanted the best for me. They wanted the best for me, basically. And that I need to like at least try out and apply for masters, apply for scholarships, anything that will, just I could develop myself with. And so what happened was I applied for I applied for the one scholarship that I knew would have me come back to my home country after I'm done, and that was a Chevening scholarship. And weirdly enough, I ended up getting the scholarship, and which everyone else was excited, but me. That was a weird thing. I ended up, and I was admitted at. And I know you're from Wales, right, Stuart?
Oh, from England.
Oh, okay. So
Close
I got
enough.
to. Okay, yeah. So I got admitted to Cardiff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, And so I remember, so I knew I was going to go in, I was going in, I was bound to leave in 2019 September. So I remember in around July of 2019, I can't remember what exactly triggered, but that at that particular moment, I remember the day, I remember the specific place I was in. I just, my brain again just snapped, and it was this time it was just bad anxiety. And so where I was working at the time, I used to sit at the on the 11th floor, and I remember going to pick my phone as I'm looking outside the window, and at that point I felt like I was about to jump, and that's it. And then, like, also just add more context, at the time also I had a close friend of mine who had gone abroad to study and ended up had bad depression and almost attempted, and actually I don't know if he did attempt suicide, but he was on the verge of, and that became, at that particular moment, that became a theme. So it was, oh my God, am I gonna go to Cardiff, and that's gonna be my, that's gonna be the outcome. And like I can remember in the past, I'd had many themes, but they weren't, they didn't come with bad anxiety. They were distressing for sure, and but they weren't, didn't come with bad anxiety. This was the first time that I had like bad anxiety. And this time around, because I started having again panic attacks, and the panic attacks hit really different because of the theme, in my opinion. Like it felt like it was actually happening in my mind. In my mind, I felt like this is definitely going to happen. So I remember on that particular day when I was in the office, and I had a bad panic attack, and I thought I was gonna, like, in my mind, it felt like I was gonna jump off, right? So I remember stepping back, going back to my seat, and I immediately took my phone, like called a friend who I know, I think she'd done psychology or something, so I figured she'd know if I could get a therapist or anything of the sort. I just knew I needed help. So I immediately reached out. She sent me a couple of numbers, and then I started making calls. So I remember calling one particular therapist, and I was like, so this is what I'm going through. And by that time, I'd done a couple of Google searches, and aside from the harm theme, I also had, weirdly enough, sexual orientation themes. And it was actually, those two are predominantly the ones that during the height of my anxiety at that period were like were a nuisance. So I remember calling her and telling her that, in plain words, I just told her I need to leave to see tomorrow. So I don't know what's happening to me, but I need to see you today. And she was like, "Are you sh like most people would want to postpone therapy?" I was like, "Nope, I'm not most people. I just need to leave. So I need to see you today." And so she said she had to close. I think she was closing at like 5:30 p.m. And she was like, "I'm like, I'll see you even if it's 6:30. I don't care. I just need to see you today." So I immediately rushed over to her, and unfortunately or fortunately, okay, unfortunately, she didn't know about, now that at least I've known more about OCD and also dealing and having therapy with Ashley and everyone, like I've gotten to know what OCD treatment looks like. So while I know she came from a good place, like she didn't, I guess she didn't know a lot of what OCD treatment looks like. So in the beginning, it was talk therapy, and then so early in my life, I'd also lost my dad, so it was always going back to, because I'm an orphan, did I grieve the right way and all that. And I knew that that was not what I'm going through, even though I didn't know about OCD or anything a lot about mental health at the time. I just knew it wasn't that. So we kept going back and forth, and so my hopes for going to see her actually were that she'd say that I'm not in the right state to go for my master's, and so and so I wouldn't have to leave the country. And this is a fortunately bit where, even though she might not have known a lot about OCD, she told me one thing, and she was like, "Sydney, you know, you only beat anxiety with anxiety." I was like, "What are you like?" And she was like, yeah, so for you to get over whatever you're going through, you have to go to school, and that's the only way you'll get over whatever you're going through. And I was like, that's absurd. Like, that doesn't sound realistic at all. And so I braved through that period, and it was really bad. And so I go to Cardiff. God knows how I got through that year, through 2019 to 2020, at the height of my OCD. It was bad panic attacks, and I didn't even know how I was managing my classes and stuff. So I took up an MSc in data science, and so there's a lot of, I honestly, it was an uphill battle, like just sitting through anxiety. And of course, I wasn't even handling anxiety the right way. So it was just panic attack. Immediately a panic attack is over, I get my books and try to study a bit or something. So I got through that, and then came back to Kenya in January of this year. So initially my mind, what I thought was, the reason I'm going through all this this period was because of the big change I'd gone through. And rightfully so, but that was, of course, in my mind, I thought that once I come back home, everything will settle and all will come back to normal.
Yeah.
So I did continue like therapy sessions with that therapy, but that therapist, sorry. But it was mostly talk therapy, and like I wasn't getting like the like actual things that I need to do, like to work through the OCD. And even though at that point I knew it was OCD, I just didn't know there was anything like ERP. I didn't know there was like the CBT skills that you could use. I didn't have any idea about all that. So I come back home January this year, and then July. So there's a bit of a dormant period. And then in July, I started having like relationship themes, intrusive thoughts about my girlfriend. And then again, somehow the harm theme crept back in. And I remember this particular day, I don't know, again, I was compulsing for sure, because I remember Googling, does God forgive suicide? I don't even know why I did that. So just a curious search, but of course that didn't give me the result I was hoping for.
Nice.
And I'd say paradoxically, I was hoping, as OCD, as classic case of OCD, I was hoping for a definite answer, and there's no definite answer to that particular question. But that threw me off. That threw me off. Like, this has to be the worst period of my OCD for sure, because now my OCD translated the results of my findings to, because God is gracious and God can forgive you. Said it's the all His own who knows, depending on everyone's circumstance. I was like, oh man, is that an incentive for me to do it, because He'll forgive me? And now, as weird as that thought is, it really took me off. So I got into like bad panic attacks. And this time around, like, it had to be the worst, because now I couldn't understand why I'm going through this and I'm at home, like where I have my support system and everyone, and I couldn't understand why I'm going through what I was going through. And so this was July of this year. So I had like a bad, really bad 2 months. I remember now about end of, no, actually, yeah, 1 month actually, because at the end of July or mid-August there, I had like, I think the worst, I know every panic attack, every anxiety attack seems like the worst when you're going through it. But this time around, when I had like these panic attacks, like there were two nights back to back where during the height of the panic attack, it felt like I was actually losing hope. Like, it felt like life can't be this miserable. Like, this is not how life is supposed to be. And so I remember reaching out to Christy Hodges, and I sent an email. And at this particular point, I was like, okay, my therapist is like the therapist I'm currently seeing, which was like I wasn't getting enough. Clearly, that wasn't working. Also, I felt. And so I asked for any therapists who are able to treat anyone in Kenya, because I searched, I kept making, searching around, making calls for any therapists who are specialized in OCD. And by this time I knew about ERP. So I was specifically asking for, do you know about ERP? And the moment they have no idea, I was like, okay, I'm not going forward with you. And so Chrissy sent like a list of therapists who can practice like across boundaries or regions. So of course, due to the limitations of telehealth laws and all that. So I started sending out emails asking anyone for help, asking them for support. And of course, they kept sending back rate cards, which were for like contextually for us in Kenya, like the rates, and understand how rates can be different, but those rates were so high for me, I definitely couldn't afford. So at this point I was like, man, it's a lost case. I really don't see how am I gonna survive this. And so something interesting happened. Honestly, I actually think it's a miracle, because I don't even know how that exactly happened, because I emailed Beyond Boundaries, Ashley's practice, and the person who was, I think the manager, the person who was who deals with the emails and everything at the time, sent back the rate cards. And of course, the moment I saw the rate card, I was like, okay, I mean, I'm definitely not going to be able to afford this as well. So at this point, I'd lost hope, actually. I was like, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do. So Ashley sends an email and she says, oh, hi, Sydney. Coincidentally, I was in Kenya a part of my life, and such a coincidence, and so on and so forth. And I know our rates are a bit high. Would you be okay if we could subsidize for you? And I was amazed. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm actually going to get help. Like it felt surreal. So I told her, yeah, for sure. I'm definitely up for it. I need help like today. And we started having sessions, and I started realizing, well, I knew rumination. Like, for example, throughout the sessions, I realized that rumination is a compulsion. And it's just weird that I didn't even know the extent to which I was ruminating. It just seemed so logical when I was doing it. But the more we kept on having the sessions, the more I realized what I was doing wrong. And then, so the harm theme, the sexual orientation theme and the harm theme ended up like subsiding quite a bit. I'm still like up and down. I guess everyone says that it's not a linear journey, which is true. But I started now obsessing, which is now been like OCD is so persistent, so creative. I'm like, it annoys me. But I now obsess about obsessing. And so what that became is every time I'd listen to, and the reason I was saying OCD stories for me became like an exposure, is because every time I kept listening to episodes of OCD stories, every time someone would say that they have good and bad days, I'm like, oh God, I'm done. Like that means there's still nightmares after treatment. Like I'm never going, this is it. This is suffering from day one to the last day. And so, of course, because you never listen to things or view things objectively when you're in the thick of OCD. And so that's been like my journey so far. So right now it's I've made a lot of progress, honestly. I've learned how to sit with uncertainty, which is new, because I didn't realize how much because we'd already formed a habit of compulsing to every thought. It's a new feeling. It feels really dangerous to sit with uncertainty. It feels like it's not the normal thing to do. So no. So still doing sessions with her. It's been 10 sessions and there's been a lot of progress. And I'm curious to see how where my recovery journey leads me.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing, Sydney. It's really, really great to hear your story. And loads stuck out for me, but a few things in particular. One was, you know, as you rightly acknowledged, when your mum said, you know, I don't care if you cry milk or blood, you're going to school. And that was, and it's almost like maybe your brain just said, well, I can't get out of this, so what's the point in worrying about it? And it kind of went silent, maybe. And then the other one was, I'm forgetting now. I'm blanking. But yeah, Ashley, before she became a therapist, as you know, lived in Kenya for a bit or worked there. So that's awesome that kind of, as you said, it's almost like divine intervention, maybe.
Oh, it is. And you know, the crazy thing is, like, my mom's case that I shared, because I've been asking around, I've been wondering, like, okay, am I the only one in my family who deals with this? And as far as I'm concerned, I am. But I came to learn that my mom did deal with, bad anxiety. So I can imagine how hard it was for her to have said that to me. Because knowing how fragile she was, she definitely must have said that and then went to the car and started crying in the car. That must have been the hardest thing for her to do. But it like, she didn't know, but that got me through my high school. But I'm also extremely grateful. I know for, like, most people, like, OCD has taken away a lot of their life. And I'd be lying if I say that it did that for me. Because again, like, for me, it was like very pockets of, I don't know how I got through, to be very fair, because the instances where it was like really bad, but unknowingly, I sat through it and I was like, I'm going to force myself to do this, even though I was comparison. So I don't know how my life would have turned out, if it would have turned out better or worse had I not had OCD. So it feels like it's sometimes a bit discouraging when I notice that I do certain things because of OCD. Now it's like, oh man, now who exactly am I, or what am I supposed to be doing in certain situations? Like, that's been the journey of discovery is what is also proving to be a bit interesting.
Yeah, and also it's kind of like, now that you're doing CBT and with Ashley, it's almost like you know better now. You know what you need to be doing. And when you're not doing it, do you feel guilty at all of, like, I should be not doing these compulsions, or I should not be doing X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, I do. Actually, like, we did have a session with her yesterday, and our topic of discussion was rather that I'm trying to be perfect with with the cutting out of the compulsions. So now I feel like I'm beating myself up about every time I do a compulsion. It's like, sometimes I just actually yell out loud, like, oh, Sydney, what are you doing? And I think if people are around me, they must think I'm mad for sure by now. But so I'm learning to also humanize the experience, which is hard because I know how to love other people. I just don't know how to love myself.
Really good point. Really good point. I think, I think that's crucial for a lot of people just generally in life, but with OCD of, like, just as I tell my clients, like, you've got to try and be soft on yourself and caring because it's not easy, and we're not looking for perfection. We're just looking for slow and steady movement in the right direction, you know, and at times you're going to falter and step back, and that's okay. We pick ourselves up and try again, and easier said than done. But and then the other thing that just thinking about, you know, when your mum said that about school and how hard it must have been for her, but she maybe knew instinctively or from her own experience of, as tough as this is for me to say to him, it's what he needs, it's what's going to help him. And then the other thing, when you did the sort of talk therapy, although it didn't massively help, the therapist did say to you, right, you need to go do your studies, you need to face it. So it's almost like, I don't know, like a couple kind of like guardian angels, so to speak, keeping you going until you could find Ashley or get the right help.
Yeah. And, you know, like at the time, because I mentioned, like, I also had like sexual orientation themes, like another funny thing that happened along the way was, so like, so I was in Cardiff from September 2019 to September 2020. Then I went to Geneva briefly for an internship that I was doing from September all the way to December before I came back. And at the time, I got to an accommodation, a house where I was sharing with other members, and like two of my flatmates, one was gay and the other one was the lady was, and the other was lesbian, right? And so that was like the biggest exposure for me. So I was like, my mind was like, God, like how are these things aligning? But that really helped me because honestly, like I ended up had a really good time with them, most amazing people that I've met, like, and as much as I didn't know how that turned out to be an exposure, like it kind of helped me a lot. So that with regards to like that theme, as much as it still creeps back from time to time, it was I kind of got used to it. So it's like many things happened in the course of my life where it's like accidental exposures or something of the sort, I should say, so, which got me to literally have to deal with the situation and get through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the other thing I remembered that really stood out for me in your story was, I can't remember what you were mixing with water. What was it? Not to encourage anyone, but just...
No. So in my first year of secondary, so by that time I'd learned that the appendix is a vestigial organ, right? So basically I can do without. And so my goal was I need to figure out a way of getting out of school for an extensive period of time without harming myself to a point where my life will be at stake, right? So what I did was, and I don't even know if this period of time is what caused it or it was just something that I did as a like not being taking care of my health over a period of time, but I do remember for that year, for a couple of months, I used to frequently like take a bottle of water and mix it with sand or with sand or like, yeah, it was just like small but sand, but like, and then shake to the point where it's actually like the water is actually brown at this point. And then I drink it down. Oof. And then I do this repeatedly. I know it sounds mad, but it's actually mad, really.
Well, but I mean, I bring it up because, again, not to encourage anyone to do that, but it just to bring it up to show that the lengths you were willing to go to get out of school, you know, it just shows you how much you were suffering, that you were willing to put yourself physical pain and risk, because there's the risk of appendixes exploding, I think. So I think it just, I don't know, it just gives credibility to the amount you were in pain at that time from OCD.
Yeah, and actually at the time, like when I did go to hospital, I was in an acute state. So like my appendix was about to, I just went to hospital at the right time.
Yeah.
And so I literally had to be operated on I went to hospital like at 8, 9 p.m. on, I can't remember what day it was, but I had to be operated on first thing the next morning to just to remove my appendix. And that was, of course, at the time, now that I look back and now that I know about OCD and I know what I was going through, it's insane to say the least. But I think like one thing that has helped me a lot in my journey, I think it's because of me personally, my character. I don't shy away about talking about anything, really. Like I honestly don't believe in silence. I believe that me keeping quiet about my experience or about my pain or my suffering won't solve it. So I make fun about I laugh about my experience, about my anything in life, really. I talk about it, I laugh about it. Hey, like what's gonna happen?
I appreciate that too, and it helps others. But yeah, I think it's also like, just to stick with that, the drinking the water with sand, and obviously put you in hospital and you're in acute state, which means you're in real danger. And it's a good example of people with OCD, including myself, do compulsions, to make ourselves feel safe. Yeah. But in this case, your compulsion actually put you in real danger. So though you were doing it to keep you safe, I think that's just a really good example, because I'm sure you're not the only one who have done a compulsion that's kind of put them at risk. Hopefully it's not that common, but who knows. Well, thank you for sharing that. Okay, and was there, so maybe it's come in the last 10 sessions with Ashley, or maybe it came before that, but was there like an epiphany moment or light bulb moment? Was something just clicked and you kind of understood OCD or the treatment of it or anything else?
So I'd say two things, actually. One, and I'd say this to encourage and to just maybe hopefully this someone finds this valuable in their recovery journey. I'd say your recovery journey is your own. And I know we all say that, but the reason why I say this is because at the time of my suffering, actually in July, I kept on joining support groups on Facebook, support groups on many other just with like OCD coaches, and I was desperately looking for help. But I realized that some of these, at least support groups, are not well governed, or they're not well, don't have some form of direction.
Yeah,
becomes a platform for like a lot of suffering, because every time you go to the support group, you're just meeting other sufferers like you, and no one has anything good to say. And so at some point I started, I feel like it really stunted my recovery process as well, because every time I'd go to the support group, I'd always see someone like, oh man, this OCD is getting me depressed, I'm done with life. And I'm like, oh God, is this supposed to be a support group? Are we all doomed, you know? And it makes you focus on other people's recovery journeys that you don't even end up focusing on your own. One thing I realized that like your recovery journey is your own. Like if support groups really do help you, that's awesome. That means that's your recovery journey. But I think it's really awesome for you to determine, because even though we all have OCD, we're all different people.
Yeah.
And so we all have different experiences in life outside of OCD, have different mannerisms, we've been brought up differently, we have different beliefs. So it's very, what's some of the things that are going to get me grounded in my recovery might not necessarily be the things that will have you grounded in yours. So I realize it's important to just have my own recovery journey. So I really had to get out of majority of those support groups and actually just deal with the one source of information. And that was Ashley, my therapist. And so like, I'm going to just get all information regarding OCD from her until I'm at a point where I can be able to do it on my own. And the second thing was that I learned is seeing through the response prevention to the end. And so this is what I realized early when I was cutting out the compulsions. It's like I was cutting out compulsions halfway. So which, so I don't know if it makes sense, but I'd start off with the zeal of getting rid of compulsions. And then somewhere along the way, I feel like I let go and I creep like a couple of compulsions. I start doing a couple of compulsions and ends up undoing like a lot of the progress I'd made. So an epiphany moment for me was I realized that, okay, so I need to see through the response prevention bit of the exposure till the end, because at some point in the beginning, I kept wondering, is this really working? Am I, is this helping? And that really helped me. So I think my last one was, I'd say, don't take in too much than you can handle with regards to the recovery. I realized that I was taking in a lot of content, resources, and I think you also mentioned this at one point in one of the episodes, where it's better to have like one thing that you're doing, but you're doing it consistently. And so I realized for me, like, I need to dumb down my recovery process or journey to things that I can actually have control over, like I can understand, because I realize that at the peak of my suffering, all the principles, all the books that I was reading, and I was reading like books, audio books, like almost every day, and they're amazing principles, amazing values, but at the peak of my suffering, it's very hard to make sense of all that. I really need to know, for me, I needed to know, so what do I need to stop doing? And what do I need to stick to see, to make progress? And so once I got to understand that, oh, my compulsions is actually the rumination, I was like, okay, fine. And among the other compulsions probably I do, I just need to cut out that. And everything else, I may not need to know at the moment. I may need to know as I progress in my recovery journey. So I started off with that. So I'd say have some sort of, like, break it down to chunks that you can actually handle. Because again, too much of everything, you end up doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, really good point. Yeah, with OCD, your brain's giving you too much anyway. And then and then if you make therapy too much, it's just overwhelm. And like you said, keeping it simple, doing one thing and doing it really well. And then move on to the next thing, and then those seemingly tiny steps, which of course they're not, all add up, you know. Yeah, excellent. So words of hope for anyone listening who has OCD, either in Kenya or anywhere else.
Oh man, let's say there's one thing we always have, it's hope. Life is and now I'm even speaking in future tense, because I'm speaking about the life I'd want to have, is I know there's hope, and we're not, even though we are suffering, we are warriors, and we're going to get to do all the things that we'd want to do, and you're just going to, it's going to make you stronger, and every step of the journey, everything you keep doing, you're going to look back one day, and I guess we're all going to smile and be happy, because I believe everything happens for a reason. So I think you're going to smile and look back and be like, oh, there's a reason I definitely had to go through that. And I'm sure it's going to show in other aspects of your life, even amongst people who do not even have OCD.
Nice. Thank you for sharing. And then you've got a billboard in, is it Nairobi where you live?
Yeah, it's Nairobi.
Cool. And what do you want on that billboard to say?
Do it scared, but do it anyway.
Yeah. Is that something Ashley says? Because I think she...
Oh, I'm not sure.
No, maybe not then. But yeah, that's good. I like that. Okay. And, you know, you can pick up your phone and call the 20-year-old you. What do you tell him?
Oh, brace yourself. You thought you knew it all. You know nothing.
Yeah. So we could tell every age of ourselves. Like,
yeah
you think you know it, you don't.
And I also just, I'd really like, now that I've gone through this, and now that I'm going through it, and now that, like, I'm curious to see what, like, life has to offer, I'd really love to, like, create awareness and help. And, you know, this side of the world, unfortunately, there isn't much going on with regards to OCD support. And there are a ton of people, I'm pretty sure, who are having it rough. So I don't know if there's any way I can be of support, and like through the IOCDF. I don't know if there's, like, just to create awareness to it, I have no idea, but I'm like just desperately like want to help other people. Because if I went through that, and just that I was maybe based on how my personality was okay to talk about it, there are a ton of people who are not going to speak about it, and God knows the amount of suffering they're going through in silence. So yeah
well, it's a good goal. And then lastly, anything else you wish you could have shared today?
Nope, not that I can remember.
Cool. Awesome. Well, look, Sydney, thank you so much for sharing your story. The first person I've had on from Kenya. So that's cool. And hopefully it helps inspires people in your own country, but I know it will inspire listeners from everywhere. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, sir.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip / donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. If you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care. Thank you.